Chapter 20. Greece gets civilized again. Greece gets an alphabet. The Mycenaeans are gone. Now Greece is full of barbarians, the Dorians from up north, and the sea people, who are also called the Philistines, who invaded Greece from the Mediterranean Sea. These people can't read or write. They're not used to living in cities. Greek civilization has ended. But wait. Something strange is happening. The longer these barbarians live in Greece, the more civilized they become. They're no longer wandering around looking for cities to attack. Instead, they're settling into villages. They're learning how to farm and fish. They're becoming Greeks. The Dorians and the sea people lived in Greece for hundreds of years. They looked less and less like wild warrior tribes, and more like civilized merchants, farmers, and storekeepers. They started building houses. Their houses became fancier and fancier, with kitchens, rooms for taking baths, and separate rooms for men and women to entertain their friends. Soon they started building houses close to each other in villages. Then the villages grew even larger into cities, each one with its own government and its own army. They learned how to grow olives, grapes, figs, and wheat, and how to make wine from the grapes. Instead of riding out to kill their neighbors, they learned how to enjoy civilized sports like wrestling, chariot racing, and horseback riding. They loved to dance at weddings, at funerals, at feasts, and at sports events. As a matter of fact, they soon invented over 200 dances to use on all occasions. The women no longer went out foraging for food, and they certainly didn't spend their time putting up tents, washing, and cooking like barbarian women. Instead, they spent their time indoors, away from the sun, so that their skin would remain pale and beautiful. They kept slaves to do all the hard work. Now these barbarians were known simply as Greeks. We know more about these early Greeks than we know about the barbarians, because the early Greeks soon learned how to read and write. They started to write down stories about their ancestors. They started to write down the myths and fairy tales that they told their children, and we still have some of this writing today. The early Greeks didn't use the same alphabet that we use. They used their own letters. They probably learned some of these letters from the Phoenicians, who had one of the first alphabets. Here are some Greek letters. This is called an alpha. If you think it looks like an A, you're right. It sounds like an A, too. The alphabet that we use today borrowed many of its letters from the ancient Greeks. Here is a kappa, a Greek letter that makes the same sound as our K. And here is a tau, a Greek letter that makes the T sound. And here is a Greek beta, a letter that makes the B sound. Our alphabet is named after the Greek letters alpha and beta. Can you hear the letters alpha and beta in the word alphabet? Other Greek letters don't look anything like our letters. Here is a Greek letter called a psi. It makes the sound ps. That's a sound we don't use in English. The psi looks a little bit like a trident, a three-pronged weapon carried by the Greek god Poseidon, who lived in the sea. The letter is named after Poseidon, too. Can you hear the psi sound in Poseidon's name? Here is one more Greek letter. It is called a theta, and it makes the sound that our letters th, th make when you say them together. Even though some of the Greek letters are different from ours, we owe a lot of our alphabet to the Greeks. If you have an A, B, E, H, I, K, M, N, O, P, T, X, Y, or Z in your name, you are using a Greek letter whenever you write your name. How would your name sound if the Greeks had never invented these letters? The stories of Homer. When the Greeks began to learn how to read and write, one of them decided to write down the old Greek stories that had been told out loud around Greek fires for years and years. His name was Homer, and he was the first great Greek writer. Tradition tells us that Homer was blind, so he listened to the stories he heard and then wrote them down using the Greek alphabet. Homer wrote the story of a famous war, the Greek attack on the city of Troy. This war was called the Trojan War, and Homer tells about it in his long poem, The Iliad. After he finished The Iliad, he wrote another story called The Odyssey. The Odyssey was about Odysseus, a Greek warrior who fought in the Trojan War. When Odysseus started to sail back home, he ran into all kinds of trouble. Here is one of the stories from The Odyssey. Odysseus and his men sailed away from Troy, looking forward to their return home. They praised all the gods of Greece for keeping them alive through the war, and they thanked the gods for their victory. But they forgot to thank Poseidon, the god of the sea. Poseidon was furious at being left out. He sent a strong wind to blow the ships off course so that Odysseus would have a hard time getting home. Odysseus and his men got lost out there on the sea. After many days of sailing, Odysseus and his tired, hungry sailors saw a beautiful island. It was cool and shady, full of wheat and grapevines and wild goats that could be killed for food. So they landed their ships on the beach, got out their bows and arrows, and hunted. When they had killed enough meat, they lit fires, roasted the goats, and feasted. And the next morning, when the dawn lit the sky red, they got up to explore. Around the other side of the island, Odysseus and his men found a huge cave carved into a cliff. Laurel trees grew all around it. In front of the cave was a pen, walled with stone, and filled with hundreds of sheep and goats. "Who lives here?" Odysseus asked. "Let's go in and find out." He took with him his 12 strongest men, along with a jug of sweet wine for a present. The rest of his men he sent back to the ships. Odysseus and his 12 companions came up to the cave and peered in, but they could see no one. Carefully, they crept in. There they found pens of lambs and baby goats. The walls were lined with racks of cheeses, each cheese bigger than a man's head. Beneath them sat the bowls into which the cave's owner milked his goats, each bowl large enough for a man to lie down in. When they saw this, Odysseus's men were terrified.
"A giant lives here," they said. "Let's take some cheese and some of the lambs and get back to the ship before he returns."
But Odysseus refused to run away. "We'll wait here and greet him when he returns," he said. So the men cut up some cheese and ate it for their dinners, after offering some of it to the gods as a sacrifice. And they waited. Dark fell over the island, and when it was completely dark, they heard footsteps, each one shaking the ground. In through the door came the cave's owner. He was a giant, as tall as three men standing on each other's shoulders. He had only one eye right in the center of his forehead. He was a cyclops. The cyclops was herding his sheep in front of him, and he carried over his shoulder three or four trees that he had pulled up for firewood. He flung them onto the floor of the cave with such noise that Odysseus and his men hid themselves in fright. When all the sheep were inside the cave, the cyclops rolled a huge stone across the cave's entrance, a stone so heavy that 20 men couldn't have shifted it aside. He milked his sheep and goats and got up to light his fire. When the flames roared up, the cyclops saw Odysseus and his men hiding at the far end of the cave.
"Well,"
he roared,
"what do we have here? Robbers? Have you crept into my cave to take my sheep and my cheese?"
"No," Odysseus said, his voice shaking with fright. "We are merely travelers on our way home. Please show us some kindness and hospitality. We are hungry and cold."
"If you are travelers," the Cyclops said, "where is your ship?"
But Odysseus was afraid that the Cyclops might want to find the ship and destroy it, so he lied. "We were shipwrecked on your island," he said, "and our ship is destroyed." The Cyclops didn't answer. Instead, he snatched up two of Odysseus's men and ate them on the spot. And then he washed down his horrible meal with goat's milk, lay down on the floor, and went to sleep.
"Let's kill him while he sleeps,"
Odysseus's men urged him, but Odysseus refused.
If we kill him, he said, who will let us out of the cave? That stone is too heavy for us to move. We would die in here.
So Odysseus and his men spent the night huddled at the back of the cave, listening to the Cyclops snore as loud as thunder. The Cyclops slept all night. When the red dawn came, he woke up, lit his fire, milked the goats, and grabbed two more of Odysseus's men for breakfast. After he ate them and drank some more milk, he pushed the stone away from the entrance to the cave and drove the sheep out. But before Odysseus and his men could dash out of the cave, the Cyclops rolled the stone back again, as easy as putting a lid on a jar. Odysseus's men were terrified, moaning and crying. But Odysseus paced up and down the cave and thought hard. Finally, he went to the pile of trees that the Cyclops had brought in for firewood. Several of them still lay beside the sheep pen where the Cyclops had dropped them. One of the trees there was tall and green. Come on, Odysseus said to his men. Be brave. Do what I say, and we'll escape. Let's cut a long piece off the end of this tree, about as long as a man is tall, and sharpen it. Don't ask why, just do what I say. The men cut the tree and sharpened it, and then Odysseus burned the sharp point in the coals of the fire until it was hard and black. He hid it underneath a pile of straw, and then he and his men waited all day long for the Cyclops to come back. When the monster came back into the cave that evening, he drove his sheep and goats in and again sealed up the door with a huge stone. Then he grabbed two more of the men and ate them, washing them down with goat's milk. And then Odysseus took his courage in both hands and went forward. Cyclops, he said. You've eaten so many of my men that you must be thirsty. Milk won't help that thirst. Here, I've got a jug of the best sweet wine you've ever tasted. He held up the jug of wine that he had brought into the cave, and the Cyclops sniffed at it. It smelled so good that he drank a mouthful, and then another, and then another. Soon the whole jug of wine was gone, and the Cyclops was very sleepy.
What's your name?
He growled.
Who's giving me this wonderful stuff to drink?
My name is No Man, Odysseus said.
No Man. I'm pleased with your wine,
the Cyclops answered.
So I'll eat you last.
And with that, he sprawled over and went to sleep, right there on the ground. Then Odysseus and four of his men dragged out the sharpened log they had hidden in the straw and drove it right into the Cyclops' single eye. The Cyclops leaped up and roared with pain. He stumbled all around his cave, grabbing blindly for Odysseus and his men. But they got easily away from him because he could no longer see them. Soon, Odysseus and his men heard other footsteps outside the cave. The Cyclops' friends and neighbors had come to find out what all the noise was about.
Why are you making so much noise?
They called to the Cyclops.
You're keeping us from sleeping. Is someone attacking you?
No, man!
The Cyclops yelled.
No man is trying to kill me.
No man?
The other monsters answered.
Well then, go back to sleep.
And they all went away. The Cyclops, groaning with pain, lay down until morning. Then he got up, feeling his way around with his hands, and rolled the stone away. He started to herd his sheep and goats out of the cave, but he reached down and patted the back of every animal that went past him so that neither Odysseus nor his men could sneak out with the sheep and goats. So Odysseus caught 3 fat sheep for every one of his men and tied the sheep together in groups of 3. He told each one of his men to hold onto the stomach fleece of the sheep in the middle of each group and to let the sheep carry them out past the Cyclops. The Cyclops put his hands right on the sheep's backs, but he couldn't find the men who were holding on underneath. When Odysseus and his men had gotten out past the Cyclops, they ran for their ships. The rest of the men saw them coming. Odysseus started to yell, "Pull for the sea! Pull for the sea!" And as soon as they had scrambled aboard, the oarsmen rowed the ships out into the water, safely away from the island of the Cyclops. Then Odysseus began to shout, "Cyclops! Cyclops! See what happens to you when you eat guests who come to your house? You should have known better than to fall for my tricks." The blind Cyclops heard his jeers. In fury, he wrenched a huge boulder off the side of the cliff and threw it towards Odysseus' voice. Waves pushed the ship around, but Odysseus shouted again, "Cyclops, if anyone asks you who put out your eye and spoiled your beauty, tell them that it was Odysseus."
"Curses on you,"
the Cyclops yelled back.
"I'm the son of Poseidon, the god of the sea, and I will ask him to send waves and wind that will sink your ship so that you'll never reach home alive."
Odysseus ignored the Cyclops' threat. He told his men to row for the open water. As soon as they were far away from the island, their sails caught the wind, and they headed for home. But Poseidon heard the Cyclops' request. He sent winds to blow Odysseus off course and waves to batter his ship into pieces. It took 10 long years and many dangerous adventures before Odysseus finally reached his home. The First Olympic Games. The Greeks celebrated courage and strength by telling stories about brave, strong people like Odysseus. They also celebrated courage and strength with a big festival called the Olympic Games. The bravest and strongest Greeks came to the Olympics to compete for prizes. The Olympics started when two cities in ancient Greece made peace after fighting with each other for years and years. To celebrate the peace, they decided to have a festival, a big celebration, in honor of the god Zeus, the chief god of the Greeks. The festival was named after Mount Olympus, the highest mountain in Greece. The Greeks thought that Zeus and the other gods lived on Mount Olympus. At the festival, the Greeks feasted and made sacrifices to Zeus, and they also ran races. The winners of the races were given wreaths made out of olive branches to wear on their heads. The olive leaves represented peace. The Greeks decided that they would get together every 4 years to have the Olympics and to run races in honor of Zeus. As time went on, more and more Greeks from different Greek cities came to the Olympic Games, and the Greeks added more kinds of events to their games. Instead of just running races on foot, they started racing horses as well. They held boxing and wrestling matches. They even invented a competition called the pentathlon, where the athletes had to do 5 different events. The winner had to throw a discus, a metal frisbee, and a javelin, a Greek spear, farther than anyone else. He also had to win a long jump competition, a wrestling match, and a foot race. But only men were allowed to compete in the Greek Olympics. Girls could watch, but they weren't allowed to race or to do any of the other events. And married women couldn't even watch. They weren't allowed anywhere near the Olympics on pain of death. That's because the Greeks thought that only men could be truly brave and strong. They thought that the best way to honor the gods was for men to train their bodies to be as graceful and powerful as possible. The Olympics were held every 4 years for almost 1,000 years. People came from all over Greece to compete in the games and to watch the other athletes. They all camped out at the games and spent their evenings feasting and listening to music. Poets would recite poems and stories out loud to entertain the crowds. These poems and stories were like movies to the ancient Greeks. Some of the poets probably told the story of the Odyssey. Others told the story of the attack on Troy. And others performed new stories and poems that they had written themselves. The winners of the races and other competitions were treated like heroes. They were given banquets to honor them, and when they went back home, their own cities rewarded them with money and with free food for the rest of their lives. Hundreds of events take place. Wrestling, running, and boxing, just like in ancient times, but also gymnastics, ice skating, soccer, basketball, swimming, and much more. Today, women can compete in the Olympics as well as men. Athletes come from all over the world, not just from Greece. But the games are still called the Olympics after Mount Olympus, and they still celebrate strength, grace, and courage, just like they did in the times of the ancient Greeks. Note to parent: Homer lived around 800 BCE.